And with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Jimmy H from Sweden.
Hello, my name is Jimmy and I'm a drug addict. Can you hear me? It's nice to be here. The best thing about this is that I'm not nervous at all. I feel so comfortable right now. That's the best thing. I feel so comfortable. I'm so calm from within. Can you see it? No, I'm just kidding. I have this big book with me. It's a Swedish edition. Woo! Woo! So I realize I'm not gonna read for you, but at least I'm looking important right now. I look very important. I have a big book. Yeah. I'm self-centered. I'm afraid. I'm nervous. I'm shaking. And wait a minute. I can feel my heart. And that's familiar. Yeah. That I have felt many times before. I'm going to share my story with you, and it was funny that you say, Rob, that we connected. I felt the same way, but just before I met you, we was going down, what do you say, we were going to land, you know, and there was a pressure in the cabin, and I felt my eye, and I did like this, and I had blood, and I'm just in my self-centeredness. Now he is going to realize that I have relapsed. And you know, I'm starting like this, and I'm like, what the fuck? You know, 4.5 years and still that self-centeredness. What does other people think of me, you know? And it took all the way when I was in the hotel room, I identified that fear. I asked God humbly to remove it. I discussed it with my new sponsor and I called the sponsee to me. And guess what? My fear didn't go away. It didn't disappear. It was there, you know. And I guess God just gave me the power to live through my fear these days. He doesn't remove it. But I want the 10-step working like a Valium, you know. In my mind, the 10-step is going to work like a Valium. I'm going to take it and I'm going to... That's what I want. I want it to work like that. And that says a lot about me and my problems, you know. When I came into CA, I had the same idea about spiritual experience. If I'm going to be honest, I wanted the spiritual experience to go like this, you know, fast in my like drugs, you know. But it doesn't work like that. I need to do something to get something in this program. So. Yeah, I love Cocaine Anonymous. I really do. And I also love cocaine. What a coincidence. And I think that depends on each other, you know. I believe that my pathological love for cocaine and many other mind-altering drugs got me to CA. And thanks to my love, my pathological sick love for drugs, I'm able to recover through Cocaine Anonymous. And I don't know what about drugs I like or love, but I believe it's the mind-altering part, you know. And always, even though the drugs stopped to working like I wanted them to work, it always was better to be high than not high, you know. That's an important fact, you know. I didn't take drugs because I hated drugs. I did drugs because I loved drugs, you know. That's and I'm totally sure that if I'm gonna you know take drugs today, I'm gonna love it today too, you know. But with help from God, maybe I don't take no drugs today. I don't know. But if I'm continuing to practice these principles in all my affairs, my experience is that I'm in contact with a power greater than myself. It's not that I'm just believing God. I experience God by working this program, you know. That's wonderful. And when I think about it, I become, you know, emotionally, because I'm a real addict, you know. I didn't believe that I was going to stand here and talk about my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. If you had asked me 5 years ago, I have said I'm going to be dead in 5 years. Thanks to Cocaine Anonymous, I'm not only sober. You know, I can be a good father, I can be a good man, I can be a good human being, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, and today I'm going to talk about how it was for me back then when I was a victim of the disease of addiction. And I'm also going to talk about what's happened to me when I didn't do what you guys suggested when I first met you, because I think that is an important fact to point out, you know. And I'm also maybe going to talk about how I live in this program day by day, because I am a recovered drug addict. Woo! Woo! Yeah. I have been moved from the problem with drug addiction to the solution for recovery, and I haven't done that by myself. I didn't wake up one day and said, hey, I'm out of here, I'm quitting. It wasn't like that for me. Really don't. But when I was younger, in my about 15 years, you know, I took a lot of drugs with my friends. Some of my friends, they was, no, I'm over this. I go home, I don't want to do this anymore. Then they leave. And I was always stuck in the apartment, and I felt insulted. What the fuck? We need to use more. So what do I want to say with that? It's a difference between a person who has this disease and a person who don't have this disease, you know. And I'm a man that has this disease for sure. So when I was younger, my first memory in life was that I was afraid. I was afraid, and I had no reason to be afraid, but still I was afraid. And I remember it so well, because it's like a physical memory. I was on this soccer school when I was little, about 4 or 5 years, and we had this gathering in the middle of the field, and I sat on my football, and from nowhere, this fear came in my body, and I felt so alone, and I'm starting to look after my father in the side of the court, but I couldn't see him, and I felt for sure, I'm all by myself. He has left me, and he has never left me. You know, it's no reason, but that fear, it was still there. And that spiritual condition has followed me through life, has followed me everywhere. And it's, I can't come up with a reason why, and it's not important to know why, but I have this spiritual malady within me from an early age, you know. And the first time I drank something, I was 6 years old. And it was not the conscious choice. I looked at my father, he drank whiskey. He was not an alcoholic, but he drank whiskey sometimes, and he's sipping on his whiskey. And I remember, I thought he looked so curious, you know, with his little apple juice in his glass. And I looked at this glass, and one day I came up to the glass and I poured it in me. And from one second to another, I felt safe. You know, that kind of way, ease and comfort. They talk about that in the big book. And I felt that in all of my body. I didn't know what I have done, but I felt safe. Then I probably fall asleep. I don't know. I was little. I had a small body, and it was whiskey, you know. And when I made a conscious choice to use, I was 11 years. And I remember that so well, too, because me and my friend, we bought a six-pack of beer each, you know, and we had decided we are going to drink now. And that same feeling when I drank, like I was when I was 6 years old, came into my body. I felt safe. I felt safe, you know. You know that feeling of ease and comfort, you know. I was puking all over the place, and it seemed like I was, you know, at the worst place ever. But in here, it felt safe. It really did. So what do you think? A guy like me, 12 years old, of course I wanted to drink again. So I drank again, and again, and again, and again, and eventually, you know, I developed this disease of addiction. And every drug or drink I have ever taken, has gave me one thing, and it's this phenomenon of allergy. I always wanted more when I took the first one. And sometimes I didn't even like the drugs, you know. Oh, that wasn't so good. I take more. I don't like LSD. Have you another one? I mean, that's totally logical for a guy like me. That's the story of my life, you know. I remember I was 15 years old. I was going to try ecstasy for the first time. It was this pink, you know, Motorola's, and I ate, you know, 18 of them, you know. I was totally messed up. My friends didn't want to be with me because I overdosed, and I was all the time, everything I remember, I took too much of everything, you know. I didn't know what was wrong with me back then. And I tried to, you know, control my using every time. And every time I tried to control my using, it became worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. I can continue. And worse and worse and worse. That's the progressive part. I understand that now. This disease, it never gets better. It always gets worse. You know, but it took some time for me to realize that it becomes worse and worse and worse. Sometimes I believe that it's getting better. You know, when I was 17, I found cocaine. One line, and I got the feeling it's getting better. You know what I mean? And that feeling I had for a long time with cocaine. It felt like I have found the love of my life, you know. Of course, when you found the love of your life, you're continuing. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. And that's the story of my life. I say it again. But meanwhile, I had this moment of clarity, because when I developed this disease, I started to, you know, I took the cocaine and I'm cooking it up with, you know, baking soda, and I started to smoke it, and it becomes even worse for me and my spirit, and I became so obsessed, you know. And I remember one time I took my mat and I did like this, and I smoked in dirt, and the time just, and I was, what the fuck am I doing? Then I continued. So I have had this moment of clarity for several times. Another time I had my needle against the stove, I was gonna sharpen it up, then it just quit. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Then I started again, you know, because I didn't have a solution. But as I see it now afterwards, God was coming into my life and tried to give me an insight. But I wasn't there, you know. I hadn't a solution. And that's why it's so wonderful to be in Cocaine Anonymous, because we share a solution between us, and also a problem, you know. And I love you guys for that. If we just gonna share the problem, I wouldn't love you guys. I would love the drugs. But now, when I have gone from the problem with drug addiction to the solution for recovery, with help from God and with help from Cocaine Anonymous program, I can honestly say that I love this fellowship and I love you guys. That's the big news and the miracle in my life, you know. I'm going to drink some water. You know that feeling when you have a task in front of you? Even meanwhile, you're doing the task. Your mind tells you, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. You know that feeling. I experience that feeling right now. So, if I didn't have this program, that thought, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, would be God in my life. But thanks to Cocaine Anonymous, I don't have to listen to that kind of thoughts, because I have a power greater than myself in my life today that can direct my thinking and direct my action in a proper way, you know. Anyway. My addiction became worse. I started with needles. I started to inject my drugs, and it really, you guys know the drill, you know. It's not, you know, I didn't have any friends left, even though my using brothers and sisters, they didn't want me near, because I was so psychotic the last years. The only thing I did all the time was standing like this. You know, listening. Somebody said something, I'm like, shh, I'm gonna hear something right now. And that's what's all it is in my life. And people didn't want me near, you know. The guy who only stands still and listen for nothing. For nothing. And I believe people were after me. I crawled in wood, in the woods, in dirt. And I remember one time I had been in the forest under a tree for several hours. People were after me, you know. And I come up in my apartment, I locked the door, and I had this big package of cocaine with me. And I was supposed to, you know, pack it up in smaller bags. But instead, I started to sniff and I started to smoke, you know, and it knocked on the door, you know. I knew it. Fucking cops. You know, I ran into the bathroom, opened the ventilation and throw down the drugs, you know. When I opened the door, it was a guy this tall. Hello, is Linus home? He wanted to meet my son, you know, and after that, you know, I took a machine, I did a hole in the, what do you say? Oh, yeah, in the wall. And I took a vacuum cleaner down there. So I get up the drugs and I started to use again. And I don't say this because I'm gonna glorify in any way. I'm saying this because I want to share with you the insanity of using, how it was for me when I was a victim of this disease of addiction. And now I can laugh at these things because it's funny. It is funny. A vacuum cleaner in the wall, it's fucking crazy. But then, when I was there, I was so afraid, you know, my shoulders were like this, I was so afraid. But now, when I have a solution, thanks to Cocaine Anonymous, I can talk about these things and I can feel, you know, I can be glad in some sick way. You know, yeah. And It was also a pretty tragic things going on in my home. You know, I had two children, one stepson and one son that was biologically mine, and I mistreated them so bad. Thanks to these drugs, I remember especially one time. I was going to land on heroin, and my son, he was asleep, and I woke up. He used to wake up in 4 or 5 in the mornings, you know. He was he woke up early, and I woke up 2 in the afternoon, and I saw my son Johannes. He stand in his bed, and he was screaming like this, and his eyes was like this, and he has, you know, poop all around, and he was so hungry, he had eaten his own, so. And I remember that when I saw him, I became so, you know, it was so tough for me. And I really wanted to quit then. But it took about 30 minutes, then I was on it again. And that was only one occasion. It happened several occasions where I mistreated my children, where I hit my wife, where I was a douchebag. You know, when I was little, a little boy, I didn't say like this. When I growing up, I'm gonna be a drug addict, and I'm gonna be a douchebag to my wife and my kids. And I've done the best I can in life from that day. I've done the best I can in life from that day to be the best person I've ever could have been. And it turned out like this, you know. It turned out like this. It turned out me high on cocaine, high on amphetamine, high on heroin. And I felt that I didn't have a choice, you know. So when I got arrested, 2010, it felt so good, you know, because The cops did what I couldn't do for myself. The cops took me and locked me in. And when they, you know, shut the door, yeah, you know that feeling of, yeah, what a relief, you know. But it only took 2 days. Then I could do anything to get out and use more. But it says a lot about my motivation to quit, my motivation to change my life. And I came to a prison in Sweden named Håga. In Swedish, they say, kom till Håga och börja droga. Came to Håga and start using drugs. It's many, it's much drugs on Håga, so I couldn't be clean there, you know. But I met Cocaine Anonymous. They come over to my, you know, apartment where me and my fellows were sitting and doing time, and I remember that so well. It was they came every week, you know, and it meant so much for a guy like me when they came and talk about how it was for them, how they have recovered from you know, that same spiritual malady, the same addiction as I was in, you know. And they, I remember they talked about this big book. They talked about conception of the disease, and they talk about the plan of action. They said, if you are like me, if you have this disease, and they had drawing up on a, you know, a wall, they mentally obsession and physical allergy, and they explained to me what that was, and they say, if you are like me, you need a plan of action, otherwise, you know what's gonna happen otherwise, and I'd be like, yeah, but I'm going to a treatment center right now. I don't want to use the SEPs. I listen to you, what you're saying. It sounds good, but it isn't for me. It isn't for me. So I had an own idea of recovery. And I was released to a rehab center and did this psychotherapy, you know. And I remember the therapist, he told me, he said to me like this, he said, Jimmy, when you feel angry or when you want to use drugs, hold up and look for 5 colors in your surroundings. Then I'm like, what? He wanted me, you know, I want cocaine. Wait, black, white, gray, red, blue. Now I'm not... That's the solution, my friends. Go out and try it. No. Of course, I went back to the drugs. You can see why, you know. I didn't have a solution. I didn't have a solution to my problem, even though I knew I had a hinge of what my problem could be, thanks to Cocaine Anonymous. I didn't have a solution. So what happened to me? When I was released, the second day... on probation, I took my son in his, you know, I don't know what you say, what, yeah, in, I didn't hear you, but in, in a, yeah, yeah, and I took him to my dealer, and I bought 10 grams of heroin, and I don't even like heroin, you know. Do you know what my thought was? I need money, I can sell it. You know, and I couldn't sell it. I came to a park and I smoked that heroin and I fell asleep and my son was in the, you know, that thing. Yeah. Yeah. And from that day, my life was really upside down. I was afraid all the time. I gave away my children to social service, and a sick thing about that, when I gave them my children, it felt so good. That's pretty twist up. I remember it so well. When they came and took my children, it felt so good. Because now I can focus on what I'm supposed to do, and that's using drugs. I had given up. I thought that I had tried everything. And I was a bad parent, I was a bad man, I was a bad human being. It's better if they are off to my parents or something. So it felt good. And I remember it. And I remember that day that I laughed and I took more drugs than I used to take. And it was It was, pretty sad. And I became, not homeless in a way. I slept at homeless shelters. And sometimes friends to me, they told me, come and sleep at my place if you have any drugs. But when I had drugs, I wanted to go to the homeless shelter because I don't want to share my things with people. I just want it to myself, and I just want to take so much drugs I can before I die. That was my motto, And what happened to me? The 22nd of Mars, 2013, I don't know, a medical store. Do you say that in English? I was a southern medical store in Sweden, in Västerås, where I live. A man came out, and he was a methadone patient. And I robbed him on his methadone. I kicked his ass, and I used a lot of violence against him, and I took his drugs. And the day after, the cops found me at the central station sleeping. What a criminal, because I have had an ID that I was a criminal, and I ended up robbing a man on his methadone. And I remember when I got this methadone, it felt so good. Yes, a strike. But what happened from that day is that God came into my life and separated me from alcohol and drugs. And that's the big news, and that's the miracle I want to share with you. That's the strength in my story, And from that day, thanks to God, thanks to Cocaine Anonymous program, and thanks to this wonderful fellowship, I haven't been forced to use. I said been forced to use because when I don't do this program, I'm gonna use, even though I don't want it. So from that day, I haven't used any drugs. That's wonderful. It's about 4.5 years now, and the solution wasn't the police, The solution wasn't rubbing a man on his methadone. But when I'm detoxing myself from, all kinds of drugs, one thought came up to my mind, and it was Cocaine Anonymous. I'm starting to think about Cocaine Anonymous because they have done hospital and institution in the prison that I was in. And thanks to that, I'm starting to, I'm starting to remember what they said. I'm starting to remember they talk about attending meetings. I'm starting to remember they talk about the big book, the concept of the disease, the plan of action, the fellowship. All that things come up to my head, and I believe that was God. I believe that was God that put that memory inside of me. And when that time I came to a rehab center, and I did all the things they wanted me to do at the rehab center. All the things, everything. They talked about the disease. I knew that I was sick, but I didn't know that I had this disease, So what happened to me? When I was in a sober living house, I get in contact with my sponsor, and he took this book, and we started to go through it. And when he described the concept of the disease for me, I got, goosebumps because I could see all my life through that conceptions. I could see from an early age, I could see all my life depended on that conception of the disease. Without that conception of the disease, my life wouldn't be that way that it was. And the life I was living had hit me so hard that I was able to see the truth. Once again, I get this moment of clarity that I was talking about before. But this time, I sat in front with my sponsor from Cocaine Anonymous, and he said like this to me, "Yeah, you're a sick man." He said to me, "I don't know if you can recover, but if you really do this, it might be a chance, What? I was like this. I need to do something. And he said, "Yeah, it can work, but he wasn't like this, it's gonna work. He was like, "It can work if you, seek it very, very hard and with a very, very high enthusiasm, it might be a reality for you too." So he gave me the choice of either take a step in Cocaine Anonymous and practice these principles and do this program of actions, or do nothing. And nothing for a guy like me, when I have understood the concept of the disease, was insanity. So I had a choice, only one choice. Otherwise, I took this spiritual help that he was talking about, or other, I was going to continue to the bitter end. And I wanted to live. I wanted to live. I haven't always been have that will to live. But at that moment, when he shared his hope with me, I wanted to live. For the first time in many years. For the first time in many years, I wanted to live. So you know, I get down. I get down on my knees and I pray the, you know, third step prayer, and I turn my life over to God, formally and from within, you know. And he said to me one thing at the third step. I don't know, I'm not that good at English, but he said, you need to be convinced that your life run on self-will is gonna be fucked up. It says otherwise in the book, but I don't know what words to use. But that was the meaning of what he said. And I was convinced. And what had made me convinced of that? You, the drugs. The drugs, the disease had made me convinced that any life run on self-will is for me. You know, so I started to do my inventory, and you know, it was like, yo, this guy, he robbed me on drugs. He didn't. It was like this. The first inventory I took was, you know, very basic from the addiction life, and I had a resentment towards my ex-wife because she was, you know, an idiot, and I had resentment to my parents because they were idiots. They took care of my children, but they were idiots. You know, I had a resentment towards my sister. She had, you know, helped me a lot in life, but she was an idiot, you know, fucking idiot. I even had a resentment towards my children. Okay, they were not idiots, but it was other reasons, you know. And what happened to me when I did the fourth step? The first column, I saw that, yo, this man is an idiot. In the second column, yeah, he's still an idiot. In the third column, okay, I'm in this too, you know. Something within me is also in it. And in the fourth column, I saw my shortcomings and I realized that I got a responsibility in life. I got a responsibility in life. I'm just not a victim of circumstances. I got a responsibility in life. And that was the big insight for me. And through the fourth step, I realized that actually I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. I can believe that I know a lot of things. A lot of things I can say. I know this and know that and know this. But actually, I don't know nothing. That was my spiritual awakening. I don't know nothing. You know, a blank sheet. And that was what I needed to be to build my life on a spiritual structure. And in the fifth step, I shared this with my sponsor. He was a bit rough with me, and it was a big thing for me to talk about myself and not other people. So the change for me come in the fifth step. The change come and I started to feel that these things within me were going to disappear. And when I did my sixth and seventh step, I felt free for the first time in my life. You know, I have felt captured ever since that day when I was 4 years old and sat on my football. I was, you know, captured in myself, in my self-centeredness, in my fears, in my, you know, everything. And for the first time in life, I felt, you know, free. So I was going I did my eight list, you know, and I'm starting to make amends. And my wife, my ex-wife, was the first person I reached out to, and she was high when I did it. So she, I want you to take care of my baby, and I want you to take responsibility in life. And it felt so good for me, you know. I got this situation to handle about me. She gave me so much confirmation about my change in life. So it felt so good. The day after, she called me, "You're idiot. Give me cocaine or cash." When she has landed from her high, you know. So I have learned in the ninth step that I need to be willing to do good, you know. It isn't about me. I need to reach out to the one that I have harmed and have an honest will to restore it, or what do you say? It isn't about me. And I have been needed to take my ninth conversations plenty of times with some people, because I'm an addict. I have an ego. And sometimes I get things to handle about me instead of the person I'm reaching out to, you know. And the 10th step, the 11th step, and the 12th step is the steps I live with each day, you know. Like I said in the beginning of the speech, I have a plan of action. If I'm afraid, if I feel resentment, if I am dishonest, if I am selfish, I have a plan of action. And sometimes I am so obsessed that I can't see, you know, that I'm afraid. Like yesterday, I was so self-centered that I couldn't see that I was afraid. I was all up in my head, and hundreds of thoughts were, you know, in my head, and I couldn't see that I was afraid. Then it becomes pretty destructive. But when I'm watching out, I can go back and I can take a deep breath and I can hand it over to God. I can discuss it and I can reach out to a person that needs my help. This solution is a spiritual solution, and it's a, I don't know what to say, altruistic. Do you say so? Altruistic, yeah. And every time I think about myself in a selfish way, I'm not in this solution. Every time I think about that the world owe me something. I have always had this feeling that the world is owe me something. When I had that feeling, I know that I'm not in the solution. And what do I want to say with this? These steps isn't you take once and then you are free forever. I need to continue practice these steps all the time, because otherwise I will become spiritually sick again. And maybe my crazy mind is gonna believe that something outside of myself can restore my inside. And when I am in that point position, I'm very dangerous out, my friends. Because then I'm very close to be obsessed in the way a drug addict is, you know. And I'm also talking about continuing practicing this program, because my first sponsor who helped me through these steps, last summer, he took a relapse, and he came to me and he said, "Jimmy, can you help me? I don't want to live." And I took up this book and I tried to help him. We did the first three steps, the four steps, and I remember we sat on a mountain in Sweden, and he did the fifth steps with me. Then he went home, and the day after, I got this feeling in my body, you know, it doesn't felt good, you know, it felt horrible. And I decided to go over to him, and I banged on his door, you know, and he didn't open, and this feeling become worse and worse and worse and worse within me, and I called his ex-wife, his daughter's mom, and I get the extra key and I open it, and he sat there. I ran to him and I took him. He was cold, you know, and it was pills all over the place and, you know, booze. He had died, you know, in this disease. And it was so, I don't know why I say this right now, but I guess he was recovered. He gave me hope. That person gave me hope, the same hope that I'm living on today. But he in some way he started to quit practice this program, and he died, you know. So for me, it's very important to continue, you know, the basics, service, doing my 10 steps inventories, talk to my sponsor, you know, always be of service to the newcomer. Always. Always. And it isn't all the time I'm feeling, yes, I want to take a newcomer home. It doesn't feel like that every time, but I need to do it anyway, because my solution isn't within me. The solution is this program, and it comes within me if I practice it, you know. It's starting with action, and it ends with action. that's how it is, you know. And before I quit, I'm going to also say that my second sponsor took a relapse yesterday, or last week, I meant. So I don't have any luck with my sponsors. Anyone want to be my sponsor? No. I have a new sponsor, and we haven't started working the steps again. And I have informed him that maybe it's going to go very bad for you. and he's going to help me anyway. He's going to help me anyway, and that says a lot about his compassion, you know. Today I live with 3 children, and I don't do any drugs, I don't beat my wife, I don't say to my children that they are useless, or I don't act like they is gonna think by themselves that they are useless. And sometimes when I am stressed out and don't act in a good way, I can go to my children and I can say to them, I'm sorry. Can I give you a hug? I couldn't do that back then. So it's all thanks to Cocaine Anonymous. And it feels like I my English is going to get worse and worse and worse when I speak that right now. So I'm quitting now, I want to thank the committee for inviting me. It's have been really a great honor to be here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope that I see some of you in Sweden someday. Yeah. Thank you.